Michael Avery with Classic Business.
So we're going to dive straight into tonight's panel, and it's all about, well, a joint collaboration, might I say. Writing on his blog recently, Wandile Sehlobo of AgriBiz pointed out that cannabis might become an increasingly important part of government's drive to place agriculture at the center of its growth. So far, that's mainly leaned on potential expansion in hectares of labor-intensive and globally sought-after horticulture products, the traditional grains and oilseeds. And the provinces that could assist in realizing this goal are KZN, the Eastern Cape and Limpopo, obviously regions that are in desperate need of stimulation, of job creation and growth. There are currently about 1.6 million to 1.8 million hectares of underutilized land in these provinces, which Sehlobo said could be put to full production. Now, changing perceptions about cannabis around the globe and its growing value raises the very important question of whether we should be putting a concerted effort into research on this crop so that we can at least guide our policymakers to better assess if its production benefits could be balanced by measures to mitigate the obvious unintended consequences here. Now, it's a great pleasure to welcome to tonight's panel to get the lay of the land legally and practically, starting with Ian Jacobsberg, a partner at Hogan Laval South Africa. Ian, welcome to the show.
Good evening. Thank you for having me.
And who else but Dr. Mohammed Gina, who has just arrived in the nick of time, the Group Executive for Research and Innovation Systems at the Agricultural Research Council. Dr. Gina, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
And in studio, we've got Pierre van der Hoeven, the founder and chief executive officer of Tuluntulu, which is AfriCannabis, member of the Cannabis Development Council of South Africa. So it's a very well-organized industry already. Pierre, by the looks of things, great to see you.
Yeah, great. Thank you for having me.
And on the line, well, we'll see if we can get Radia Khan from the Cannabis Development Council. Now, who would like to kick me off? Ian, perhaps we should just get the legal lay of the land here. We had that that constitutional court ruling saying that the private use of cannabis is going to be decriminalized in South Africa. I don't know if it's fully decriminalized yet, but the conditions and boundaries still need to be considered and legislated. Where do we find ourselves?
Yes, well, there was the constitutional court judgment, which in terms of the commercial production and commercial use of cannabis shouldn't be over-exaggerated. The judgment turned on the constitutional right to privacy within a person's own home, more than on cannabis as a product, really. So the court did hold that certain legislation in regard to the Drugs Act would have to be amended, and that will have to go through Parliament ultimately. On the commercial side, we're looking more at the Medicines Act, or the Medicines and Related Substances Act. We're looking at the regulations around foodstuffs and agricultural production more than around the constitutional issues there that were formed the hub of the nub of the constitutional court case. So now you've got a situation where certain ingredients or certain components of cannabis have been classified as scheduled substances in terms of the Medicines Control Act. Cannabis itself is classified as a scheduled substance. And what that means in a nutshell is that a license from the South African Health Products Regulatory Authority, SAHPRA, would be required in order for that product to be commercially sold.
Doctor, when we look at the Agricultural Research Council's approach to what could potentially be a quite lucrative agricultural crop in the form of hemp, I'm not particularly looking at the consumption of it, perhaps in the use of certain materials, products and the like. What informs your approach to investigating the potential of the cannabis industry in South Africa?
Thank you. I guess what we're basically looking for and what we've been researching for a number of years, 10 odd years, is to actually look at how do we get the right cultivars to be able to give us an appropriate yield and to give us the appropriate cannabis oil that we needed. So we've broken it up into fiber, which has a very low technically THC level, and now we're working on getting cultivars that have a high CBD oil, which is the medicinal oil component. So our research is based on that, and what we're looking towards is to say, how do we provide the right information and the right technology so that farmers can produce it at yields that would make it market competitive in the market.
What sort of yields would make it competitive, and what is the potential here if you were to sketch a vision for a future cannabis industry?
If you're looking at the medicinal oils, you're looking in Canada, they've got cultivars that give you a value of around 7 for the CBD, for the medicinal oil. We've got cultivars at the moment that give us levels of around 4. So what we're looking at is working at that to get us to those levels that would be make it competitive to be able to extract for both the pharmaceutical industry as well as for creams and other issues. In the case of the fiber for as a product, there we've got two cultivars registered, and in fact we're looking at trying to grow it now in Limpopo and Mpumalanga to be commercially viable. So in the case of the fiber, we believe that we have cultivars that would make South African farmers competitive in the marketplace.
And that is quite exciting. In an environment where we're talking about bringing new farmers into value chains and to and certainly to expand the agriculture sector, how should government go about approaching the development and the rollout of this nascent industry?
I guess it's, again, as a colleague had earlier stated, it's in trying to get the correct legislation so that one could actually provide a platform from which people could actually grow the industry. So we were talking to people that have already got take-off agreements in terms of boards and homes and that they want to build with the fiber. What we're now looking at is to say that as soon as the legislation comes through, we'd be in a position to work with smallholder farmers in actually being able to get them to grow the product so that the companies could take them and beneficiate that product.
There's a perception in the marketplace it's easy to grow, that it's probably, you know, it's called weed. It just grows on the side. What is the reality if you're talking about growing it for commercial scale agricultural use?
Yeah, I think the reality is that if you're looking at what the marijuana plant, that's relatively easy to grow, whereas the fibers, that's much more difficult. It depends on daylight. It depends on the soil conditions. So that's why we're saying that we've got products at the moment that we could grow in the Eastern Cape and Southern Cape. We're working to get products to be able to grow in Limpopo. And it's related to the length of day, so that the longer the days, the easier it is to grow. So it's not that easy. And we've been working on that for a number of years to try to get the best fertilizer, the best soil conditions to be able to grow that.
Because I think there is that misconception of the marijuana plant and the other cultivars, as you mentioned. Right, yeah. What are those cultivars called? Before I move on to you, Pierre.
They are all part of the same species. However, when you look at them, you will be able to, you look at tracing the percentage of two of the products. One is tetrahydrocannabinoid, which is THC. So in marijuana, that's very high, whereas in the fiber, we've been able to do research with products that are less than 1%. Whereas in the medicinal oils, we're looking at the THC being low and the CBD being high, whereas in the marijuana, the THC is high. So that's what distinguishes the different plants, but they grow very differently as well. And logically, they're different.
I'd like to welcome now Radia Khan, who's from the Cannabis Development Council, who arrived just in the nick of time. Radia, welcome. The rose amongst the thorns tonight. The Cannabis Development Council, you're obviously a lobby group for the development of the cannabis industry, but from the recreational use side or the agricultural use side?
Okay, so I would describe us more as an industry association. We have been recognized by SAPRA. So we assist in the facilitation of licenses for people, but the cannabis industry is far more vast than that. So we're looking at a plant with 50,000 industrial uses. So we divide them basically into farming, fiber, responsible adult use, medicinal, and IKS. IKS is your indigenous knowledge system, which are basically our indigenous people who have utilized cannabis for some time. And this is generational knowledge and practices passed on, and it basically has a big leg in traditional medicine.
Pierre, to bring you in from the commercial side, just share a little bit more firstly about Tulun Tulu and Afri Cannabis. You're a member of the Cannabis Development Council of South Africa, but what is your business focus on specifically?
Yeah, we're busy setting up a cannabis business. We've applied for a lot of licenses. We've looked at the industry. I've done a bit of consulting work with the government. Tulun Tulu is a media business and education and communication with the general public, the health practitioners, in fact everybody, about education is where the Tulun Tulu element comes in. Because the industry is really about one question, is why are we even debating this plant? And why is it even illegal? So if you go back and answer that question, you start realizing that even the World Health Organization has said, we made a big mistake. And where I'm coming from is to say to our country, wake up. This is not about new products. Hemp has been researched in this country for the last 15 years. We are the fourth biggest producer in the world already. It's not about something new. It's about how do we get our country into this industry as quickly as possible so that we can reap the socio-economic benefits. And while people sort of turn their nose up at this is a silver bullet, in my analysis, it is a silver bullet. It can generate jobs, up to 900,000 farmers already legalize them. It can generate foreign currency. It can, their medicinal uses, their industrial uses. So really the big message from the business sector is to say, let's move, and let's move very quickly. To give the government credit, we actually do have a legislative framework that we can start immediately. If you have a license from SAPRA, you can start farming cannabis sativa. Now, hemp and marijuana, it's the same plant. It's just, it's a human definition that says measure the THC. But there are massive different strains, and some grow in this area and some grow in that area. The point is, there are companies in the world worth $20 billion, and they are farming in Africa. And we need to move, because this is an opportunity for our people, for our country, and for our economy.
Ian, from a regulatory perspective, what needs to happen next to really unlock the potential that Pierre speaks of that is already sitting, perhaps rather latently, inside this already established cannabis industry?
Well, as Pierre said, the legislation is there. I mean, what we have at the moment is that certain of the ingredients, the cannabidiol and the THC, are scheduled in terms of the Medicines Control and Related Substances Act. Cannabis itself is scheduled. So licenses can be granted. The framework is there. Unfortunately, we have a rather unwieldy process where licenses can take a very long time to be approved. And I think really the solution would be for that process somehow to be streamlined and improved.
Radia, so often in South Africa it is all about execution where we fall down. We've got the legislation, as Ian said, it is about improving that. What are you currently engaged in with government to ensure that we speed up those turnaround times to give licenses and to ensure that we can help speed up the development of this industry?
So let's pause for a moment and look at a picture bigger than just licensing. Let's look at accessibility. Let's look at historic and cultural value, the existence and use of the plants. And, you know, us as South Africans, being robust business people, there are people, you know, carrying out business as usual. So the big question is how to get licenses in a way that the right people handle them, that they are afforded to people, and that justice is done in representation of the plant. So, like I said, 50,000 plus industrial uses. If we look at the scarcity that we are facing in terms of power alternatives, textiles, damaging industries to the environment, sustainability, cannabis viably answers all that. It's also a logical solution to a chemically laden problem. So when it comes to SAPRA licensing, we have to be realistic in it suiting the African demographic. So right now it's a carbon copy of you know, a lot of Canadian standards, which we as South Africans need to look at Africanizing it. It has to suit our business and political model. We have to look at ownership and economic growth. And the best way to pave that way is through education. We also have a short period in which legislation is going to be developed and, you know, the constitution amended. So, you know, we also have to look that 24 years into democracy, we are challenging the constitutionality of the constitution. So a lot of it is down to rights and morality, and we are in negotiations with SAPRA over some of these site master files and these licensing requirements. So we try and get people who apply for licenses compliant. We assist them in facilitating. But overall, we are not the watchdogs, but we are heading towards an industry which is self-regulatory, and we are working non-disruptively alongside government. But as it stands, government also needs to sit together. You know, law enforcement and medical controls need to sit together. So there has to be across-the-board communication and destigmatization of this plant.
Destigmatization, Pierre, is a big issue, and as you said, well, a lot of what you're doing is educating the South African public. It does look like attitudes are changing globally as we see a wave of legalization all over the world. We're often on the show talking about exchange-traded funds that can tap into a growing market, a cannabis market in the States and Canada in particular. What more needs to be done in order to help educate the South African public about the use cases of the plant beyond just what we refer to as weed or marijuana or ganja?
So we're seeing globally this total attitude change about, is this plant a gateway drug that leads to bad things? That's changing. So in the consumer side, we're seeing it a little bit, but we still need massive amounts of education. But there are pockets of ignorance. And unfortunately, one of them are the doctors and the health practitioners. They need to be educated. They are saying there isn't enough research, but in America it's been legalized. In Canada, adult use has been legalized. So there is a massive education need. But on the other side, there are an incredible number of people who either smoke cannabis or on cannabis oil for medical reasons. And my summation of the industry is it's education and quality control, because what we can't have is the guy on the corner store just making up cannabis oil and selling it as medicine. I mean, I just, you know, I don't think anybody can argue that that's good for people. But I think the fact that it's the stigma's leaving and the health benefits are now recognized, it's now a process of just driving that home, putting meat behind the perceptions.
And that's why regulation very often is a positive thing. And I think of cryptocurrencies here. It was really a free-for-all a couple of years ago, and we all know what happened last year with the price escalating and then ultimately crashing in the face of very weak regulation. This has been the year of regulators almost catching up. And Ian, back to your point, you know, local companies are going to have to comply with quite stringent regulations put in place by SAPRA. What are those stringent regulations to ensure that the quality issue is addressed?
Well, the regulations apply to all products for which a medicinal quality is claimed. And that is that those products have to pass stringent quality control tests, the manufacturing facilities have to be inspected, and SAHPRA has to be satisfied that they have the qualities that are claimed for them. They have to be satisfied that the circumstances or the situations in which they are used are appropriate, and that is why you get classifications of, and this doesn't apply only to cannabis, but of all medicines, into a list of schedules from 0 to 8. And that depends on whether they can be publicly bought over a counter in a shop, down to where only a medical practitioner can administer them, and that depends on the effect that those products will have when they're administered.
So it really follows the established framework for classifying, you know, scheduled substances 1 to 8 and whether or not you can go and buy this over the counter or buy it in your local shopping market.
Correct.
Pierre?
Can I just point out one anomaly? If you're growing a product that's going to end up in a carpet or a concrete block, it is not administered by a medical regulatory body. So this logic of regulating a plant and saying the plant's illegal and it must be regulated by the Department of Health when the plant is going to end up in an industrial product makes no sense.
But not all products that are grown and end up in, you know, cotton, for example, as far as I'm aware, can't be smoked and it doesn't have detrimental health impacts. So, I mean, you're not comparing apples with apples there.
I'll disagree, because if you're growing sugarcane that ends up in rum, you don't regulate the sugarcane. And you can go down to your local nursery and you can buy a poppy plant. You regulate the manufacture of the medicine. You don't regulate the plant. And that's where it's fundamentally flawed. And I fully support that the entire debate around hemp must be moved away from the Department of Health to experts like the ARC, who are agricultural experts. But if it's a medicinal product, it should comply with standards. But then again, I still say you do not have to regulate the plant itself. You can regulate the manufacturing process. So every plant that happens to end up in a medicine, there isn't legislation around the plant. There's legislation around the medicine.
It's a question of tax. Do you apply a sugar tax at the sugar sweetened beverage side or at the sugarcane side? And Dr. Gina, just to let you conclude, as we have to wrap up, I've got Tim Harris on the line. How do you respond in conclusion?
Yeah, I think we need to, firstly, there's two points that need to be clarified. One is that the legislation is being worked on both by the Department of Justice and the Department of Health, and that should conclude within the next 6 months or so. And the second point is around what's just been raised now, is that what's going to be and what is being planned to do is regulate to say plants with a THC level less than 1 that will end up in a fiber will be regulated differently to the ones with medicinal property, to the ones with narcotic properties. So the three will be regulated differently. So I think we have been talking to government, and I'm pretty confident that what comes out of there will be of benefit to both the smallholder farmers as well as to the society as a large.
Well, that does sound like common sense will prevail. Dr. Mohammed Gina, Group Executive for Research and Innovation Systems at the Agricultural Research Council, thank you very much for joining our panel. Ian Jacobson, a partner at Hogan Lovell South Africa, Pierre van der Hoeven, who is the founder and chief executive officer of AfriCannabis, and Radia Khan from the Cannabis Development Council.